Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff.
So, Bill, here on July 7th, 2024, what do you have for us?
Well, we have our sponsor this first hour is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. They're located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard in the city of Shasta Lake, right up there off I-5. You can't miss them. They've got everything you need when it comes to John Deere Ag products. They've got the mini small tractors. They've got mowers. They've got side-by-sides. Got a pretty good inventory right now. Plus, they have a pretty good supply of all your lawn care, your riding electric mowers, courtesy of California. Got a great inventory right now. If you're looking to buy a new mower, go up and see them. Or give them a call. Their phone number is 530-226-9226. Or catch them on the web at PapeMachinery.com.
Nice.
There you go.
So, we haven't done any shows on marijuana for a while. Bill actually ran into someone at work who wanted to know why. Oops. So I called our friend Officer Joe, and I said, "Hey, you know what? We're having people who have questions." And then the Supreme Court decision came out, and that was a no-brainer. Had to talk about it. So do you want to do our lead-in on Dave?
Well,
or would you like me to just read his bio?
Oh, because his bio is extensive. Let's read his bio.
Yeah? Well, I made it kind of short. Okay, how about this? I'll do it, and then whatever I left out, all the fun stuff, okay, you feel free and do. Sorry, my microphone's very squeaky today. Sounds like I'm working on a pirate ship. David Evans is senior counsel for the Cannabis Industry Victims Educating Litigators, CIVEL, who educate lawyers on how to make the marijuana industry accountable to their many victims. Mr. Evans was a plaintiff's litigator in personal injury and employment law cases. Attorneys who desire more information can contact him at senior counsel@civel.org, and I have all of this on the website. So before opening his law practice in 1992, he was a research scientist in the Data Analysis and Epidemiology Services Unit, Division of Alcoholism and Drug Abuse, in the New Jersey Department of Health. Interesting change of careers. He analyzed legal and regulatory requirements regarding drug and alcohol abuse, research and data collection, courts, criminal justice, domestic violence, drug-free workplaces, juveniles, confidentiality, treatment, drug testing, AIDS, drug use forecasting, and discrimination. So he's kind of been there and done that and was sort of a natural for this. Very exciting. And so you have worked with him a lot.
So in the marijuana prevention business, Dave is a rock star. He has put together a team of attorneys around the United States, and he's going to speak to this, not me, where they are looking for litigants to file cases against corporations, dispensaries, cities, towns, and states for the harm that marijuana is doing to their communities. And I'm going to let Dave speak about that. And he's, of course, going to speak about the Chevron decision today.
Yes.
And I'm going to let him talk about that.
So for people who are unclear at how marijuana might be adversely affecting your community, you, your neighbors, your kids, you can go to wethepeopleradio.us, and up top we have a tab labeled POT. Just regular old pot. And on there, there are tons of pictures. There's information about pesticides. There are lots of interviews. We have a lot of interviews. They stretch back. So we've spoken with lots of people, doctors, no candlestick makers, but butchers and bakers, I'm sure. So we've hit everybody on this topic, and there is a ton of stuff to be had there. You should be kind of wising up on this at this point. I think the ship has sailed that this isn't the magical wonder drug that it was sold to everyone.
Well, let's talk just for a second before we bring Dave on. Let's just tell the people of Shasta County what marijuana has brought to Northern California. So let me go down just a list of items just off the top of my head that I can think of. Human trafficking, water theft in the million gallons a day, electrical theft, property code violations, sex trafficking, child abuse, kidnapping, animal abuse, murder, including cartel murder.
Lots of animal abuse, too, just in case you don't care about the rest of it.
And I'm going to be doing a documentary, Dying for Your High, which is going to be just about the animals.
Nice.
Let's see. Impersonation of peace officers right here in this county. We've had them do impersonate DEA agents as they rip off grows.
Wow.
Crimes such as armed robbery, burglary, rape. And that burglary includes stealing large pieces of farm equipment for use in the grows. Dangerous conditions for surrounding neighbors and farming livestock. Who wants to be next to a pot grow today? Hazardous damage to our environment. We see clear cutting of our forests. We just had one of those occur in eastern Shasta County. Loss of wildlife using banned pesticides, which I'm going to talk about today. Honey lab explosions. We've had a lot of those, including we took down the largest honey lab in Shasta County history last year that was in two 40-foot cargo containers, and there was enough ether on site that if that had ignited, it would have burned down eastern Shasta County. There would have been no way to stop it. Heightened community fear, drugged driving. Now the statistics are 1 in 5 fatal accidents are attributed to marijuana. We have increased addiction, mental health, welfare, hospitalizations from overdoses by underage kids, using edibles, homelessness, and suicide. Now it's being tied to both of those, and obviously we have that problem here.
Finally.
Importation of illegal guns and other drugs through a transnational cartel-controlled pipeline. We are still controlled in this county by the Sinaloa cartel. However, the Chinese and the Hmong are making inroads here. This marijuana trade supports known felons on parole. And one of the things I'm going to talk about today is supplying tainted marijuana into dispensaries and an unknowing public. And there are articles out there now saying that marijuana in the state of California 100% is tainted with something. Not necessarily a pesticide, but tainted with something that's going into the dispensary and going into unknowing consumers' bodies. And we'll talk more about that.
And that's supposed to all be tested prior to sale and retail, isn't it?
Well, it's supposed to be all tested, but it's actually batch testing. So, and we also know there's a lot of lab shopping going on now, where they're seeking out friendly labs that will give them a nice clean test, so that they can pass.
What handy is that?
That's for money. You know,
yeah,
that's for money. We'll talk about that in the second hour because I don't want to take Dave's thunder.
So the Chevron decision was a Supreme Court decision from last week that we were excited about in Northern California, because Chevron has contributed. It was a deference to the agencies. So if they wanted to steal water from our farmers up on the Klamath, and the lawyers for the water district went up against Fish and Wildlife, for instance, the deference went to Fish and Wildlife. If they said the science shows we need it, it was basically a done deal, and that was the end of the show. So we were excited from that standpoint up here that maybe we could get a handle on some of our natural resource abuse.
Because they reversed that.
And yes. And then Dave put forward this terrific article about how that may affect marijuana going forward, so I won't say any more about that. It's all you, Dave. Uh-oh.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for this opportunity. I appreciate it. And just so you know, I'm up in the Adirondack Mountains in New York right now, and it's cool here. We actually needed a blanket to sleep last night for all of you people sweltering.
Yeah,
it was 120.
Thanks for rubbing it in there.
120 here
well,
yesterday.
You know, what can I tell you? Anyway, the case is Loper Bright Enterprises versus Ray Amando. And it's a U.S. Supreme Court case of June 28th. And what the Supreme Court did is they said that we are basically throwing out the Chevron case. This was a 1984 case where if a case gets to federal court regarding a statute or the authority of Congress, the first thing the court would do is look at whether or not Congress had spoken to the precise question at issue in the case, using tools of statutory construction. In other words, they would look at a law, and the first thing they would ask is, well, was Congress clear Congress was clear that would be the end of it and the court would decide. If it was ambiguous, if the statute was ambiguous, then the court was required to defer to the administrative agency's interpretation of the statute as long as it was there was some reasonable interpretation. It didn't have to be the proper interpretation.
Yeah.
It just had to be one that, you know, at least could be reasonable. Now, what has happened since 1984 is that these power-hungry agencies who want to do whatever they want, if you're a MAGA Republican, they're called the deep state, would interpret things the way that they wanted to, that gave them the maximum amount of power. And the federal courts were bound to go along with their interpretation as long as it was at least there was some reasoning behind it. And this created a lot of abuse. It made Congress lazy in the sense that that they left it up to administrative agencies, which they knew were deep state agencies, to make the interpretation. And the Supreme Court said, look, this really hasn't worked. We've tried this for decades now. It really hasn't worked. There's been too much debate about what, you know, ambiguity meant in a statute. It's allowed for overreaching of power. These agencies started doing things that Congress really hadn't authorized them to do. I can remember I was involved in advocating before the FDA concerning drug testing, and people in the FDA wanted to kill drug testing. They assumed a lot of power there that had never been given to them by Congress. So what the court said is, look, this isn't going to be the law anymore. An agency is going to have to prove their case. They're going to have to be persuasive, just like anybody else would have to be persuasive in the court. The court is now going to look at whether or not they've engaged in a reasoned decision-making within their statutory boundaries for deciding what is and what is not a proper interpretation. So what is going to happen is I think they're going to revert back to what's called the Skidmore deference, which does not afford, this is a case, Kezor versus Skidmore, Kezor Skidmore versus Swift, which is a 1944 case that said that that the courts are not going to afford an agency's interpretation any special weight. Rather, they're going to look at, is the agency's interpretation persuasive based on a number of factors, such as the thoroughness of the agency's consideration and consistency with earlier pronouncements. Now, what does this have to do with rescheduling? Well, in a way, Chevron helped us before because the DEA and HHS relied on Chevron to defeat requests for marijuana rescheduling. They came out with an opinion, the court went along with that under Chevron. So at first glance, this may seem to be not helpful to us because we actually used Chevron when we had an administration and a DEA and an FDA that was anti-marijuana. I can't say that's the case anymore. I can't say that there is any ethics left in the FDA or HHS when it comes to marijuana. The DEA, I think, is begrudgingly being dragged into rescheduling. They don't want to do it. The head of the DEA, Ann Milgram, who, when she was Attorney General of New Jersey, was in favor of medical marijuana, But the DEA is, you know, putting out signals, is, look, we don't want to do this. Send us information to convince us that we don't have to do this. So the things that are going to be looked at now.
Hold that thought, Dave, so I don't interrupt your list. Yeah. Because it is really important for people to understand that this isn't just a foregone conclusion.
No, not at all. And
it's worth fighting for.
Absolutely. I think we have a very good chance of doing it.
See, we haven't heard that in a long time. We'll be right back.
Yeah.
Our guest is Dave Evans, and we're talking about the Chevron decision that the Supreme Court just made and how that might affect the scheduling of marijuana. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Box song ringing in my ear. The next thing you know, the bartender's pouring, shots are flowing, got me stoning. All I really know is that I should be going, but I'm soaking up the moment. I'm all jacked up, all jacked up. Don't believe I've ever had this much. One thing I've learned, when you get tore up, time sure flies when you're all jacked.
Up all night selling cocaine and hash to an undercover cop who had a sister named Jan. Her reasons unexplained, she loved the monkey man. He was a Boy Scout, cause he went to be a man. Found out the hard way, nobody gives a damn. You know that they found freedom just across the Jersey line. Hopped into a stolen cop on Highway 99 when the walls came down.
I could never resist that. That was the Headstones, a punk band from Canada, and the singer plays the character of the sheriff on Yellowstone. Season a million comes in, November 10th or something? So you can watch the guy who sang that?
He got killed.
Oh, yeah, they bumped him. He's on some other show.
Yeah.
Anyway, trivia. Continue on, Dave, with our serious subject.
Hey, Dave, I'm looking at Biden's selection for the FDA, Dr. Robert Califf, and apparently now as the commissioner of the FDA, he wants to reschedule marijuana and cannabidiol as well. So that doesn't bode well for the fight. But over to you, sir. Tell us more.
Yeah, well, there's two types of employees in the federal government. There are civil service employees, and then there's politicals. And politicals are people appointed by the president, and some of them approved by the Senate. And those are the people that are really making the decisions here. The attorney general is apparently in favor of marijuana. The head of HHS is the former attorney general in California. He's very pro-marijuana legalization. Admiral Rachel Levine is the one that wrote the HHS document supporting this. She is a political. She now calls herself a woman.
Yes.
But she converted from being a man back in 2011. And she ordered nursing homes in Pennsylvania to take COVID patients, and I know this because I own a nursing home in Pennsylvania, and we wound up getting a lot of sick people as a result of that. But she moved her own mother out of a nursing home.
So she had deep belief in what she was doing.
Well, anyway. So this is really a political move. Now, on one hand, Chevron helped us when we had a friendly administration, because that opinion of that administration was given deference under the federal law. Now that we have a hostile administration, Chevron, getting rid of Chevron is going to help us, because the courts are no longer going to automatically defer to the administrative agency. So people like Dr. Levine and the head of HHS and the Attorney General and the DA are going to have to make their case in court, and it's going to be subject to an examination by the court. So I think we have a very good chance. The courts now, I believe, will look at the factual premises of the agency's expertise, the thoroughness in their consideration, the validity of their reasoning, is it consistent with earlier and later pronouncements, and the practice of the government. Now, what I find very interesting, if you look at the earlier and later pronouncements of the DEA, the National Institute on Drug Abuse, and HHS, in prior years, they've all said that marijuana is very dangerous, okay, including the FDA. So now they're reversing their position, and we're going to use all of their earlier statements against them. And when I wrote to them about rescheduling, I said, I'm going to sue you, and you better get ready for it. And I'm going to use your prior statements about how marijuana is dangerous against you. And I suggest that you not engage in that process. Now, at the time when they came out with this thing about rescheduling, Chevron was still the law. It is no longer the law. So now we're going to be able to go to court. We're going to be able to contest what they're doing. Now, what are they doing regarding rescheduling? Well, they decided that marijuana has current accepted medical use. And they have decided this on two things. There's a two-part inquiry to this. It is full of holes. It is blatantly political. It is ridiculous, and it is embarrassing that the federal government is doing this, and I'll explain why. First of all, the first thing they have to look at is whether licensed health care providers have widespread current experience with medical use of marijuana. Now, that sounds good, except that they don't really define current experience. Does that experience mean clinical experience? Does it mean negative experience, positive experience? They just have to have experience.
Yeah. And, does that mean they smoke pot in college? Yeah.
Yeah. So one of the questions that we're going to ask, and then, by the way, the Office of Legal Counsel for the Department of Justice was obviously given the job of, you know, you write up a legal opinion that says that we can do what we want to do. Okay, so this is what's going on in this legal opinion. This was written by a guy from Harvard Law School. It is embarrassing what he did. It is sloppy. It is blatantly political and unreasonable. So what they're taking the position is you got to have this widespread current experience. The second part of the inquiry is whether or not there's some credible scientific support for at least one of the medical uses. At least one. So in other words, if there is one medical use for marijuana, then it is going to be applied to all medical potential uses of marijuana. So that's their reasoning. Okay. So if you find that marijuana helps you with chemotherapy nausea, then it's going to help you with asthma and pneumonia and a wide variety of illnesses. So this is a blatantly irresponsible approach.
Yeah.
And what do they mean by widespread current experience with medical use of the drug? Well, what they said is, well, look, you know, there's a lot of states that have medical marijuana. There's 30,000 doctors in those states that have, you know, been authorized. So, therefore, that is widespread current experience of medical use. Now, there's been no studies done on the outcome of that medical use in those states. So, have they had negative problems? We know, for example, that the American Heart Association just came out and said that people who use pot have a 25% higher risk of cardiac incidents, strokes, and heart disease. Has that been reported? There's been no studies on any of that stuff. With glaucoma, smoking marijuana can actually cause you to damage your optic nerve. If you're on blood thinners, marijuana can cause you to bleed. If you're about to get surgery, you have to stop using marijuana because you can get excessive bleeding. It can increase autism scores. We've put together a look at 36 impacts of marijuana use on medical conditions. You can get that at aalm.info, aalm.info. It's for free, and it's called Risks of Marijuana Use. So there's no attempt to analyze any of this experience and to look at positive, negative. They just have to have the experience. Okay. There has been no clinical experience because the state laws only require a doctor to recommend marijuana, but not to have clinical experience with it. And there's a big difference between the two. So this is where they're going. So there's no real definition for current accepted medical use. And what do they mean by marijuana? Marijuana is can be anything, but it certainly can be the dried leaves of marijuana. And so smoking the dried leaves of marijuana can now be considered a medicine. No medicine is smoked. No FDA medicine is smoked because smoking is inherently dangerous.
Because that makes no sense.
You cannot titrate the dose, and that's why nothing is smoked. But yet they're saying, yeah, it's okay. If some doctors recommend it, we think that it's okay. So they go on to say that it has to be a licensed healthcare provider, but they don't define licensed healthcare provider. So this is a federal legal opinion. So I looked at how licensed healthcare provider is defined under federal law, which is what they're going to be stuck with. Okay? This includes nursing facilities, hospitals, home health entities, blood centers, ambulatory surgical centers, pharmacists, laboratories, therapists, and anybody or any kind of therapeutic clinician. So now we have people with no experience as physicians per se are going to be able to use this stuff.
Dave, let me give you an example, and you can tell me whether these would fall under that category. How about an LVN, licensed vocational nurse? Can go ahead and recommend marijuana, yes or no?
I would think so. It includes therapists and practitioners, and under federal law, those are physician's assistants, nurse practitioners, nurse specialists.
How about a marriage nurse, family counselor?
Yes, absolutely. That is a therapist and practitioner under federal law.
How about people who stayed at the Holiday Inn Express?
Midwives, social workers, clinical psychologists, a dietitian, a nutrition professional, a marriage and family counselor, a mental health counselor, are all practitioners, healthcare providers and practitioners that could be included. This is very sloppy not to define this.
Dave, a county social worker who's hired off the street to give you benefits could all of a sudden say, yeah, we're going to give you marijuana too.
Well, that they are under the definition under federal law of a health care provider.
Wow.
And this DOJ opinion says that it could be for licensed health care providers. So that's sloppy. That is very sloppy not to further define that. Okay. And then when they get to define experience, they don't. Does it have to be positive, negative? They only say it has to be current. Well, what does that mean? They don't define current. They don't define experience. Have you used it one time, two times, three times? And there, it does not require any experience in dosing. You know, if you're going to use the medicine, you have to show studies regarding the frequency of administration, duration of administration, route or method of administration, age, weight, and sex factors. I mean, you prescribe a drug based on age, weight, and sex factors. interaction with other medicines or foods, risk for children, risk for geriatric people, risk for other drugs, all of this stuff they can ignore now. Okay? And if there's experience with it, we can forget about all the rest of the stuff. We can let bud tenders at marijuana facilities now advise people on dosage. There's no dosage information like this for marijuana in any way, okay? And does experience have to do with the quality of the marijuana? Well, no, okay? We don't have to look at the composition, purity, and concentration of the marijuana, all of which varies. Marijuana has more than 100 cannabinoids in it. There's not going to have to be anything about that. We're not going to have to do clinical trials of people with pre-existing mental disorders, renal impairment, epilepsy, cardiac conditions, and so forth. Now, they say that there's got to be experience, and it has to be under state medical licensing organizations. No state medical licensing organization has ever, to my knowledge, put forth a statute or a bill in the legislature to legalize marijuana for medicine. However, they are required to do it by bills that the legislatures have passed. So what they're saying is that if a state medical board is doing this, it must be okay. But these boards have all been forced to do it by the legislature. None of them have ever volunteered for this. So again, they're using a very unfair standard. They're also not requiring any warnings in the experience in deciding what has a current medical use. You all know that when you go get a prescription drug from a doctor and you get the package insert about that drug, there's a whole page and a half, 2 pages of warnings and all this kind of stuff. There will not be any warnings required about patient counseling information, pediatric use, geriatric use, pregnant women, marijuana use causes birth defects, underweight babies. It causes men to not be productive in producing sperm. There is not going to be any requirement about adverse reactions, dosage, and so forth. So this is extremely, extremely reckless thing that they're doing. And by the way, this then becomes the model for other medicines. So if some pharmaceutical company wants to get some drug approved, well, instead of spending $1 billion on going through the FDA process, they can spend $200,000 getting it passed by a state legislature. And that's exactly what's happened with medical marijuana. We go in and fight these bills, and there are, you know, $10-12 million donated on the other side to get this stuff approved as medicine. That buys a lot of dinners at politicians, events.
Yeah, it kind of gets everybody used to the idea, and then everyone goes, well, that worked out. Let's just go a little further. We have We have to take a quick break here again. Sorry.
Okay.
It is 20 minutes till. You can always tell what time it is. It's 20 after or 20 till. And you're listening to We the People. You can find all of this, and I did put that that guide on there for you. It is on the website at wethepeopleradio.us. Well, we can't hammer the Rachel Levine deal enough. So, back to you, Dave.
Well, okay, now the other thing that they have come out with is that they say that one of the things that they're going to consider is favorable clinical studies of medical use, and whether, and this is a quote, whether qualified expert organizations have opined in favor of medical use. Okay, they're going to consider that. But then in the same opinion, they say that no professional medical organization currently recommends the use of marijuana. And so they're going to rely on expert organizations, but they acknowledge that no professional medical organization supports its use. So who are they going to go to? They're not going to go to the AMA. They're not going to go to the American Heart Association. They're not going to go to the American Glaucoma Association. They are going to go to organizations that they consider to be experts on this subject, because no medical organizations are going to back them up. So I put together a list of who I think these organizations are going to be. I think they're going to be the Alliance for Cannabis Therapeutics, the American Civil Liberties Association, the American Alliance for Medical Cannabis, Americans for Safe Access, Coalition for Rescheduling Cannabis, the Drug Policy Alliance, the Marijuana Policy Project, Multidisciplinary Association for Psychedelic Studies, and so on and so on.
Wow.
That's where they're going to go, okay? Because they don't have any medical organizations that are backing them up. Now, the problem is that they are rejecting the prior very reasonable methods for deciding if something is a medicine. They in the past had to consider eight factors, and under the FDA rule they had to consider five factors. The reason that they don't want to consider these anymore is because marijuana cannot get through those factors. There are not adequate safety studies, there are not adequate well-controlled studies, and the scientific evidence has to be widely available, and so forth. They don't have that for marijuana, so they're making up something that they think that marijuana will be able to pass muster in, which is these very vague, not well thought out problems. Now, this is, when we go to court on this, and we're going to, if this thing goes through, we are going to point all this out to the court. We have submitted very well-reasoned volumes of information to all of them, showing why this is a really bad idea, what they're coming up with. On the issue of marijuana contamination, for example, the marijuana industry in New York did an analysis of marijuana products produced in New York after they legalized it, and they came up with the opinion that it's not healthy, it's not safe. And even the states that regulate marijuana and have done so for a long period of time continually come up with product recalls due to contamination, pesticides, heavy metals, and so forth. That's the nature of the plant, cannabis, to produce these problems. The other thing that I tell legislatures, and I told this to the FDA, is that people that are in the marijuana business right now are criminals. They are violating federal law. And what do you expect criminals are going to do when you, in quotes, legalize this? You think they're going to obey your laws? No, they're not going to do it. And they haven't been doing it. They've been allowed to get away with murder, and they have literally been able to influence the political aspects of the government through money, and that's why I think what we have to do to them, we have to do the same thing that was done to tobacco and the opiate industries, is sue them, okay? Because there you can go toe-to-toe with them in court. They have to prove their case under the rules of evidence. Government has become too corrupt, too influenced by this, too influenced by politics in deciding medicine. And we have to take them to court. And we plan on doing that.
And without the Chevron deference standing as a factor, now that that's gone, how much of a game changer is that for what you would have been doing anyway?
Good. Yeah, I think it's a big game changer because they're now humming their own petard. They supported Chevron at one point in defeating rescheduling, and they were using the Chevron deference this time to say, well, we're the agency, and, you know, we're right. And the rules have now changed, and they can't really use it anymore. They're not going to get the deference that they got before. Now they're going to have to really prove their case. The evidence is so overwhelming that this is dangerous, and that their approach is so reckless. I would be shocked if the court doesn't give us a fair hearing on it. I think they're going to. We're probably going to file the lawsuit in the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals in Louisiana, because we'll be able to file the lawsuit pretty much anywhere. You asked me also to talk a little bit about lawsuits in general, if I may, just for a few minutes.
And Dave, before you do that, I have a statement from one of our professional that called in, and he wanted to just tell everybody that it's also Health and Human Services that's pushing that. That's Xavier Becerra, and he's from California,
right.
And he's been pushing this, and none of us will show deference to Robert Levine ever. If the man can't figure out his sexuality, he certainly shouldn't be advising all of us on what we should be putting in our
Don't
body.
Don't make me play the song again.
Oh.
Okay.
Dude,
no, well, the only thing that I can tell you is that I hold him personally responsible for some deaths in our nursing home. And a lot of some of our employees got sick, and we could not allow them to go home to infect their families, and we took care of our own staff at our nursing home. We had pretty much kept it out of our nursing home and protected our patients.
Dave, before we run out of time, we do want you to talk about an anatomy of a lawsuit.
He's our hostage next hour for the first part, aren't you, Dave?
Can you stay over, Dave,
oh, sure.
for the next hour?
Oh, sure.
We'll have a good hostage situation.
All right. Well, great. Then we have more time.
Anyway, as far as the lawsuits go, I've given up on government to be responsible. The biggest problem we have with lawsuits is people still think of marijuana as not being very harmful. Okay. And so my organization, CIVL, Cannabis Industry Victims Educating Litigators, that's CIVEL.org, has been working on educating litigators and promoting lawsuits. We have a lawsuit in New Jersey right now where people in a town objected to having pot stores come into their town, and we're suing the town. I'm working on a case also where a marijuana grow operation was going to be put next to somebody's house. We have a lawsuit going there. We have a lawsuit going in New York against their marijuana legalization laws. We're about to file a lawsuit in New York against the state government. They want to spend, and this just blows me away, absolutely blows me away, they want to spend $200 million setting up pot stores in New York.
Wow.
Unbelievable.
Getting them rented, getting them set up, getting the equipment, and then they're going to turn them over to people that are, in quotes, justice involved, people that have had prior marijuana convictions. Or their children. So if your dad got busted for pot back in 1960 and you're his child, you are a justice-involved individual and can get one of these stores. Now, you have to pay the state back, okay?
Right.
But what other business gets their store set up for them and financed by the state government? But yet this is what they're doing. This is how crazy this
yeah,
is.
Yeah, no kidding.
And so, and Minnesota is doing the same thing. New Jersey is doing the same thing. So we're coming in saying, look, that's illegal under federal and under state law. As taxpayers, we're also going to file a lawsuit against public smoking of marijuana, and to give people who live in apartments the right to be free from marijuana smoke in their apartment, because it stinks up a whole apartment building. We also have a personal injury lawsuit going in Michigan right now of a young man that had Crohn's disease, was advised to use medical marijuana, became addicted to it, and his family wanted him to get off marijuana. Rather than get off marijuana, he committed suicide. This is a common occurrence. This is a common occurrence. Rather than get off marijuana, people have chosen suicide. We have at least four cases that have been brought to my attention about this. Marijuana completely takes people over, body and soul. And rather than face life without it, they choose to not face life. And that is criminal that the marijuana industry is allowed to get away with that. I'll give you another example. In New Jersey, they wanted to pass a regulation that that any marijuana that was over 40% THC had to have a warning that it could cause psychosis. Okay. So I wrote to them, I said, can you name any other product approved in New Jersey that causes psychosis? And of course there is none.
Right.
Okay? So you can still sell it over 40% THC, but you just got to put a warning on it that you're going to become psychotic if you use it.
Is that under their medical label? I mean, is it still?
No. Well, it's recreational. It's legal in New Jersey now, but this
recreational
is the kind
psychosis.
Of crazy stuff. This crazy stuff that's going on right now with this, and so what we're looking for. There is also a lawsuit that we applaud in California right now, where a young man became psychotic and is suing the pot companies. We're going to probably file one in New Jersey or Louisiana pretty soon. We're looking for plaintiffs, people who have been damaged by marijuana. People, for example, that had no prior mental illness or have a mental illness that's been exacerbated by marijuana on the psychosis. There are probably people that are dying right now from marijuana use and have no idea that it's happening to them. Let me tell you, CBD. Cannabidiol. People are eating that like candy nowadays, okay? It fries your liver. The one CBD product that's been approved by the FDA, which is a pure CBD, a responsible company, there is an FDA warning that you have to get your liver enzymes monitored because it can damage your liver. And it has not been approved by anybody over the age of 55, okay? Now, that is the most benign CBD product that exists.
And what's it supposed to do for you? What's your trade-off?
Well, it's supposed to help you sleep. It's been touted as probably 20 or 30 different diseases to help you with. The FDA has come out with warning letters to these companies saying, no, you're wrong, that's fraud, that's not true, you're not allowed to say that, stop saying that. A lot of elderly people are using CBD, probably sustaining liver damage, and they don't know to blame it on the CBD.
They're giving it to their pets, too. I mean, there's a whole industry of giving it to their pets.
And
absolutely.
And
women are using it.
And they use it in suppositories and all kinds of good stuff.
They made it weird.
Oh, yeah. And the CBD warning from the FDA says it can cause suicidal ideation. Okay? So people using it for depression are probably going to get more depressed. So this is the kind of stuff that they've been allowed to get away with. Now, why hasn't the FDA been more aggressive about this? Well, here's the problem. The marijuana industry got a law through Congress that the Department of Justice lawyers cannot spend any money contesting any state medical marijuana laws. And so the FDA depends on the DOJ lawyers to go into court and enforce this. By the way, there are criminal penalties for violating FDA laws. We've been trying to get that law changed in Congress. So far, we haven't had any luck. But the marijuana industry was very smart. They started with medical marijuana. If you are opposed to medical marijuana, you are not compassionate. You are a racist. You are blah, 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 blah. You don't want to help these poor kids and all this kind of stuff. And so the government has not had the courage to do anything about this. And this has been through Republican and Democratic administrations. The worst
super ugly.
The Bush administration.
We will, we're going to bring Dave back and keep talking about this, but the news is going to interrupt us. Got to take a quick break. You can find us and information about Dave Evans and the suits he's doing at WeThePeopleRadio.us.
Sunday.